Hello and welcome to Batflips and Nerds, the baseball podcast with a British twist. And I am your host, John McGee. Today, it's the 29th of July, the day before the 2021 trade deadline. And we are going to get into the trades that have already been made this week, as well as giving a bit of a preview as to what might happen tomorrow ahead of our big Friday night live show between 8 p.m. and 9:30 p.m. UK time. That's 3 p.m. and 4:30 p.m. East Coast time in the States tomorrow, when Darius and I, along with Pete Pratt of Marlins UK, and are you going to join us, Rob, tomorrow?
Yes,
and Rob are going to be there breaking down all the trades as they happen. I imagine it's going to be a bit of a crazy weekend in the world of old baseball. But we've got quite a lot to cover because we haven't had a regular podcast for a couple of weeks now. If you haven't, by the way, listened to Ben's amazing interview with the brilliant Felix White from the great band The Maccabees and the fantastic Tailenders pod, go away and listen to that before you listen to this one. But yeah, we've got quite a lot to catch up on, including doing a bit of a rundown of our two good, two bads of the first half of this season and talking a little bit about a name change in Cleveland. And of course, we're in the midst of the first Olympic baseball tournament for 13 years. So we'd better touch on that too. And I've got two of my good mates from the Batflips and Nerds crew joining me to talk through all of that. Of course, one of them you've already heard. It's Mr. Rob De Vera. How the devil are you?
Hello. I'm not bad. I've got the Rays playing the Yankees on in the background, and there's just been a grand slam, so that's always fun.
Well, I'm assuming it was the Rays.
Yes, 10-0 is the score.
There we go. I enjoyed seeing Yankees fans wetting the bed over the fact that Gerrit Cole is no longer an ace earlier on this evening. The fan base that will never stop giving. And I could feel him edging into the conversation there. He's got something to say about this. I'll introduce you and then you can go. Russell Eason, is Cole no longer an ace?
That's all poppycock. But the thing I was going to say is that, a pop-up went up and it didn't come back down. This is a travesty. The top should be demolished. It's the worst thing in baseball. Jeez Louise, people, calm down. Like, would you rather basically have about 40% of the games rained out in Miami or Florida or wherever it is? Because it's definitely not in Tampa Bay.
Yankees fans, I mean, they're having a season, but they're certainly having a week, aren't they? From like absolute meltdown when they traded Luis Sessa on Tuesday to absolute elation over Joey Gallo, to even greater elation from the saving of $2 million, which we found out this morning, literally the greatest thing that Brian Cashman has ever done. And then, you know, back into whiny crybaby mode over a Gerrit Cole hanging curveball again this afternoon. It's been a roller coaster of emotions for the greatest fan base in sports, but we'll talk about Joey Gallo anon. We've got quite a lot of bits and bobs to get to before we get to him, because that is, of course, one of the big news stories of the week. So, guys, Sanka, I am feeling positively Olympic today. That's where I feel like, I hope you got that reference. Russell did.
I'm going to kiss my lucky egg, man.
Yeah, oh, I did. Yes, I'm with you.
I didn't go for the patois, but I'm pleased that you did. I'm going to have to put explicit on this for the racial overtones of what Russell did there. Kiss my lucky Eggman, indeed. It's Olympic baseball. And, you know, what a way to start the tournament. The two rank outsiders, albeit, as we all know, with some very, very good players in both of those teams, particularly the Dominican Republic team, taking it down to the last couple of outs. And unfortunately, Korea snaffling a win on two hit-by-pitches this morning from Israel, and Japan snaffling a win on Jose Bautista having an absolute brain fade at first base yesterday morning. But not a bad advert for baseball at the Olympics, has it been, Russell? I know you've been following it quite closely.
They've been amazing games, and it would be a great advertisement for baseball if it was actually possible to watch it in at least in this country. You have to have Discovery Plus to watch it in this country, because it isn't being shown on one of like the 10 Eurosport channels, and BBC is most definitely not covering it. I think the only thing I've seen like the BBC cover it was about the Israeli starter being pulled after like five pitches because he got injured, and they were just like, oh, like he was a story of like coming back from surgery, like retiring, getting injured, coming back for this, and then obviously not making it out of like the first innings. But yeah, they've been absolutely amazing games to watch. Like the what I've loved is it feels like it has that atmosphere from some of like the CPBL games from last year, where you had like the on-field mics and you can hear like the teams like cheering for each other, like everything that's going on, you can hear them like clapping along and like whooping for every like even if they leave a pitch and it's a ball, it's like yeah, good show. And it's just, it's a different atmosphere to what we're used to watching with baseball. I cannot imagine what it would have been like yesterday if it had been full with people as the Japanese walked it off in the night. That stadium would have been electric. But these two games have been phenomenal.
Yeah, they said, I missed that about the Israeli starter. Who was that this morning? Who? It wasn't Josh Zeid, was it?
Get it wrong without looking it up, so give me a second.
You're saying the BBC didn't cover it. You clearly missed them having a very great baseball expert on Radio 5 Live on Saturday morning.
No, but there's a difference between like talking about the sport and letting people know that it's happening and then actually seeing the sport, so then people...
All right, Russell, come on.
See that, like, it's happening.
don't put my bonfire out here, mate.
Yeah, Adrian Charles was brilliant. Leave him alone.
I'll tell you what. Since we're now personal friends, text buddies, we're not. Adrian wanted everyone to know that he knew about baseball, didn't he?
He very much did.
A friend of mine. So, for those of you who have not picked up on this, I was on Adrian Charles's Radio 5 Live show on Saturday, and as a friend texted me afterwards. It was good of Adrian to let everyone know that he knew about baseball and then leave you the floor to explain this game to everybody else, because I don't need to know, which was, you know, kind of him. So yes, I was on Radio 5 Live this week talking about Olympic baseball. And yeah, I said, what did I say? I said, any team could beat any team. Not that we've seen any of it, Rob, unless you've got the old feed burner up of Discovery Plus. I won't tell on you.
Yeah, my pirate feed has not been working so far, unfortunately. No, I've seen none of it from live. I've seen, you know, bits of clips online. But yeah, it is unfortunate. I don't think you can really blame the local broadcasters, because there's no known audience for it. And but someone's got to take a punt, you know. And maybe if this does some decent numbers on the Discovery Channel or whatever it's on, perhaps it'll come back a bit later next time around in 3 years' time, if or whatever it is we end up with baseball back. But it's good to see it's there. I think the competition is maybe a little bit small. There doesn't seem to be quite enough teams there, and I think that is a shame, because, you know, what is the Olympics about if not watching some unknown from Mozambique barely, you know, manage to swim a length in the pool, or, you know, some British bloke fall off a mountain pretending to ski? You know, that's part of what the Olympics is about. So I really want to see, you know, like the Lithuanian C team try and make its way into the Olympics. So yeah, I want to see a little bit more of that. So perhaps the competition's a little bit small, but it's great to see it's there, and knowing it's there in the background and it's part of this big sporting thing, it's you know, that's our little corner of the internet, and we're a part of that. So yeah, it feels good.
Yeah, I mean, go on, Russ.
I was saying John Moscott was the was the Israeli pitcher, and yeah, he pitched like five pitches, and then
I mean, I have to say, I've absolutely loved seeing the veterans there. Like, really, really loving it. Like, you know, Todd Frazier, Edwin Jackson, Jose Bautista, Melky Cabrera, Adrian Gonzalez, Masa Tanaka. Like, just absolutely, like Ian Kinsler as well this morning, just massively into it. Like, this could be the pinnacle of my sporting career. Like, there's guys who've played in All-Star games. There's guys who've won the World Series, played at the very pinnacle of baseball across several continents, there in the Olympics with a bunch of kids. I absolutely love it. It kind of reminiscent of Justin Rose going and just saying he was going to dominate Rio golf and then doing it after so many guys pulled out. Love to see it. And I do not like, it's kind of irritated me a little bit this week. Of course, I got asked this question on Saturday about, oh yeah, but there's no MLB players there, so it's not a real tournament, is it? I mean, that's just garbage.
Yeah, why do people seem to except the under 23s football still being there. Mm-hmm. If you're gonna get rid of one thing for one reason and main about other things for other reasons, then it's fine.
Same with the boxing, you know. That's once they go.
that's amateur. Yeah,
exactly. So don't say that to their faces. I certainly wouldn't.
it's a valid discussion point, but it's one where you're just kind of like, come on, there are plenty other reasons to go with it. Like, I do have to say though, I would like to counter Rob's discussion of there being not enough teams. Well, I think it probably could do with like two or three more. Like, I'm maybe probably, I don't know where to put this, bar humbug on the Eddie the Eagle and Eric the Eel when it comes to like the Olympics. There are times and places, I think, for some of this stuff. And like, I think a baseball game, which like somebody will get mercy ruled in like three innings, is probably just like not worth like the time and effort. When I think the individual sports and you're not like putting anybody else out by like you competing at the same time, but say like Japan or Korea had to play like Lithuania or GB or whatever, and effectively had to waste the pitchers like three or five innings or whatever to get through that game, it kind of feels that you kind of like just slightly mess with it. But
I'm not having you laying the smackdown on Drew Spencer's brave boys, who would, as we all know, would go and dominate the Olympics.
Obviously you never know with how some of these things pan out. The baseball system for this tournament is utterly ludicrous.
Well, look, I tried to work out what the tournament rules were, and I just was like, yeah, it's kind of like a weird knockout system, kind of. But, you know, anyway, enough of that. We could literally spend the next 45 minutes trying to explain what that is. And I don't wish to do that, because we've got plenty to cover. And Russell, this is your special moment, right? Because we're going to talk about a huge event in the history of Cleveland sports. That former name, which we're still not going to mention, is no longer, and we're now all about the Cleveland Groundyards. How are you feeling?
I think I've moved on from my initial thought of lame. And I am in the fully meh territory of it's obviously better than the previous name. Like, let's just start there. There's no need to kind of make any qualms around that. Like, we should have moved on a long time ago. But also, there's like no mention of the reason why they moved on in any of like the press releases of Tom Hanks waxing lyrical about Cleveland for couple of minutes while the Black Keys play in the background. It's like, I just felt it was like it was lost, and to me it felt like they were just almost like wanted to keep with like some of what was historically about the team. So they kept really like the same color scheme, they kept a lot of things. I even think the font is not too dissimilar to some of the fonts they used in the 70s with the Cleveland logo. So It doesn't really feel like too much has actually moved on. And then the fact that it's Guardians and the previous one was Deans as well, it's like, it feels like the minimalist amount of effort was done to do this. And it was like, I've said it before on many things that I want more color in the jerseys and the stuff that's in baseball. And this was an opportunity to go out there and go, what color is not often used? Let's go with that. Let's kind of completely and utterly choose this point as a picking off point where we could kind of recreate ourselves, rebrand ourselves, learn from the past. And it's more just gone like, no, let's really think about the heritage of Cleveland, and let's really think about these statues on a bridge, which I can tell you a lot of people in Ohio have driven past and have taken no notice of their entire life until now, and people will say, well, you're obviously not from Ohio because you don't know that these are on this bridge. It's just like, trust me, I've spoken to people from Ohio and they're literally like, oh yeah, is that what they were named? I can't remember what they were called. So it's, yeah.
I didn't know that. I thought they were quite well known. See, I've been lied to and I've been had.
But it's that thing that, it's that piece that they can drop to the reporters, that they can drop to, for all of these pieces that have spoke about it. I think there was a really good piece by Rob Arthur in BP about like the whole entire thing. And I've read a couple of other pieces from some more of like the Cleveland fan blogs where they were just like, most people don't even take that road. that goes, because it's the road that goes like right by the stadium and go, and so it's just not a road that people actually use that often. So,
can I just say, obviously, I have no emotional stakes in this. I quite like it. I think it's quite. I mean, obviously, there's a team called the Guardians in Taiwan.
That's the other thing.
You know, they could have picked something completely novel. There is at least some tie back to the location. I think it's just quite cool.
Sorry, I just looked and it's 14-0 to the race.
There you go. It's the Yankees lose.
It's 10-6.
Yeah, it's I think it's just quite a good name. I like the font. I think the little logo that they've got is quite fun. The little winged G, just quite like it. But you know, I totally agree with you. Enough of the red and blue. Stop it. Like, we get it. The Star Spangled Banner, etc., etc. Why could it not have been orange? Come on, do something exciting. Or purple. Do something exciting and interesting. There's not enough purple uniforms. There's room for one.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you that the Art Deco style G and the wings that they have, and obviously the Guardian statues themselves are like in an Art Deco style. If they'd gone like more hog on the Art Deco, then that could have actually been interesting. Like, but the lettering isn't really that sort of Art Deco. Like, if you'd gone with this, I don't know about anybody else what colours they think of Art Deco, but I always think you have a lot of like black and white.
Black and white, stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like if you'd messed up like and gone, I know there's lots of white kits and lots of black kits. But
yeah,
if you'd
gold,
gone with,
black
like,
and gold, yeah.
Yeah. But then you just start to look like the Vegas Golden Knights or whatever. So, yeah, you'll get into those things. But yeah, there's a reason why I prefer pretty much all of the KBO, CBL, and NPB kits is because they're far more interesting. And as you said, John, because there already is a Guardians, and let's be honest, I wasn't particularly aware of much about the other Guardians until the pandemic hit. But I am aware of that team now, and that's kind of like. Like I don't like having the same name as another team that exists elsewhere. So,
and the name itself is a bit of a mouthful as well. When you say the Cleveland Guardians, there's a lot to getting your lips around it. It doesn't like roll. Like most of the team names, kind of roll and flow. It's a bit of a tongue twister. Not tongue twister, but you know, it's just not kind of natural. Maybe it just needs time, but it just doesn't flow for me.
And I say though, I'm just pleased it wasn't spiders. I just wasn't there for it. Like I'm not gonna lose my head. There was a team called the Spiders like a really long time ago. Let's call them that. Okay, fine. Maybe not. Anyway, enough of that. I know that you have a Cleveland Spiders shirt. I quite like that there are Cleveland Spiders shirts. I'm kind of glad that they didn't go with that as the team name. Something new, kind of. Is better in my. You look like you disagree, Russ. I'm not going to give you a right of reply. We're gonna move on to the other side of Ohio, and you know we weren't going to talk about this, but we have to. Joey Votto's homered in 6 games in a row. Apparently, he was washed last season. Very much not just extraordinary, and you know, same week he's making the dreams of kids by calling them over at Wrigley Field and giving them a ball. Just the greatest player in the history of the sport, really, isn't he?
More Votto, please.
Yeah, well, you got to realise it's post, like, July 15th or whatever it is. So, like, Joey Votto's, like, amazing, always, like, more amazing post-July 15th than he is, like, pre-July 15th.
He no like the cold. For a man from Canada, that's quite strange, really, isn't it? Yeah, and Ramon Castro as well. First 5 hits in Major League Baseball, all homers. Amazing. Like, so at least the Pittsburgh Pirates are going to have him and Ke'Bryan Hayes to watch over the course of the rest of the season. Because they've lost Tyler Anderson, a player who I'd never heard of until Tuesday.
Like, but they didn't lose him to the team that we thought he was going to get lost to.
We're going to talk about that team a bit later on. Good God, they're awful. Okay, let's talk a bit about the trade deadline, and we're gonna do a little bit of a breakdown of the trade so far. But I want to get you guys' take on this because obviously, like you know, my team's got a big stake in this. They've not made any moves yet. Yours has too, Rob. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go to you first, Russell, before I ask you also, Rob. Does this feel like a more dynamic and interesting and exciting trade deadline than there's been in recent memory to you? Because it does for it, you know, following a team that's right in the thrust of it.
Yeah, I think so. I think there are unexpected teams that are in positions of strength, and there are teams that should have been winning that aren't. So there are teams like, I would say, the Red Sox and the Giants, who probably need to add a few people to make sure that their performances don't maybe drop off to maybe the expected level towards the end of the season. And there are some bigger teams like the Dodgers, the Padres, even the Yankees, who, if they don't want to deal with the wonder of a wild card, they've got to put in some heavy investment. Or at least in this case of the Dodgers and the Padres, they've got to probably put in some investment to try and get ahead of the Giants before the end of the season, because nobody wants that one game wild card shoot off. Because it's, yeah, I've made the postseason, but did you really?
And the other thing, you've got teams who are way out of it who've got really desirable assets. You know, it's not like, oh, that fifth reliever on the Diamondbacks, he's going to be a marginal upgrade on my fifth reliever. It's, oh, Chris Bryant, he's good. Or, you know, Nelson Cruz, he's good. So, yeah, I guess I think it's that sort of rarity in baseball trade deadlines over the last few years where the buying market and the selling market is in the same need. You know, needs and wants are in the same space, Rob, aren't they?
Yeah, it's that point that Russell made about we've not gone perfectly to plan. You know, we're the buying teams who set themselves up to be buying teams at the beginning of the season. Oh, actually, they've not done it. They're not sat in that pretty position. So, you know, it has opened up. It's shaken it and it's put things where they don't need to be. I also think that there is this adherence to the actual deadline. Is people are finally starting to work out that, oh no, you can make a trade the week before, you can get your business done early. And I think there's been a start, just a leaning into people realizing you don't have to wait to the last moment. So perhaps it means that tomorrow is going to be really quiet. I hope not, because it means we're going to have to vamp for a long time. they've lined themselves up and they're doing the deals. So long may it continue, because yeah, this is the stuff that's exciting. It's entertaining.
Yeah, so we're going to have a full breakdown of some of the trades tomorrow. Like obviously, the Marlins have been very active. You know that we asked Pete to come on the deadline show because we, you know, not only is Pete really great value and really good entertainment, but we thought that they'd be making some really great last minute trades, and they've traded away probably their two most saleable assets by Wednesday this week. You know, as Russell said before we started recording, you know, wet your matches, guys, please. So you know, but we'll touch on a couple now, and then we'll cover them in greater detail tomorrow. So let's start with that. That Yankees trade for Joey Gallo. We've talked about the windmill oscillation of Yankees fandom this week. They now very much, with this 14-0 scoreline, are back in the gutter, feeling as though it was not a worthwhile move to acquire the left-handed bat that they've needed for the entirety of the season at the trade deadline, and indeed one of the top 50 players in baseball in Joey Gallo. It's been a weird one, isn't it? Because there's been some very emotional reactions on both sides of the coin to this, on Russell, hasn't there? Like, you know, the a lot of Rangers fans who seemed sort of understandably upset, you know, losing the guy who was, to all intents and purposes, the face of the franchise, but perhaps a little bit of an overreaction. The package seems to be a pretty good one.
Yeah, I think I try and think about how I would feel and like how I felt when Cleveland lost like Lindor and Carrasco as kind of like people who are like faces of the franchise. And it is bitter. It's like, yeah. If I was a Texas fan, like Gallo would be the jersey that I would have and probably would have had for like the last every season that he'd been up there being good. Like he's an immense player. So losing that sort of player, especially when it's not like, it's not the rental. There's also like the year afterwards as well. So you're like, you've given up a bit of time. It's a tough pill to swallow that knowing that your team is bad. It's an even tougher pill to swallow knowing that your team's going to be bad for a few more years at least. So that's hard. I think when it comes to the prospects, we're in a very different position to normal here because we're just about getting some reevaluations of the prospects. I think Baseball America and Baseball Prospectus have both pushed out some like early changes so people can kind of get an idea of actually that these players that have been picked up by Texas are actually now ranked higher by them than they were at the start of the season because we had 18 months of basically not knowing anything about these apart from a few of them played some games on some sites where there was some cameras, a few of them played on internal games where they had no idea apart from what was told to them by people working within those organizations. So the knowledge like gap is probably the worst it's been for probably 4 or 5 years. So what we're actually seeing now is that there's some good players that have gone over here. Like, as far as I'm concerned, like Duran is probably a bottom end, like top 100 prospect. And some of the other ones would have all moved up significantly within the Yankees rankings from the midseason. So, but I think when I spoke to you earlier, we were talking about it in our WhatsApp group earlier on, John, is that it's so hard to judge whether this is right because they won't play for 2 seasons, some of these. Well, some of them might not even play for like 3 seasons because they picked a player in like a rookie level. So you don't know whether this is good for Texas until 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years' time. And so you just have that feeling, that gut-wrenching feeling of like losing your best player. And you obviously felt it with Mookie moving on, but you got back Verdugo, who was going to be an everyday player, and Gina Downs, who I imagine might even play sometime this season, if not like...
Potentially could be the centerpiece of if the Red Sox do make a significant deal in the next 24 hours for like a Berrios level player, he'll probably be the main player in that deal, which not bad.
Yeah, so I think this is just about good for Texas, but it's always difficult to judge these with prospects, and it's not good that Texas are not competing for seemingly the next 2 years, but they're not good enough to compete for the next 2 years. So it's a good thing and a bad thing that at least the ownership and the front office understand that.
Therein lies the problem. Trading Gallo away is admitting that it's gone wrong and it's broken again. They've already been through this process. Gallo was supposed to sort of ride them to their next high. You know, he was supposed to be part of that. And I can understand fully for the fans, this is the capitulation. This is the bit saying that, sorry guys, we've ballsed it up. We're going to have to do this all again. It's just, it's like the cycle has got them nowhere and we're starting over. So God, yeah, it must be horrible for Texas fans right now. Absolutely awful.
Yeah, I mean, I did compare it to the Mookie Betts trade earlier on today, and I thought about that a bit this afternoon. The context is just so different, right? You know, the Red Sox had just won the World Series. And also, you know, much as we all think the luxury tax is not a salary cap and it's an excuse and this, that and the other, there was a pretty strong narrative that Betts probably wasn't going to stay in Boston because they just didn't seem to want to find a deal that worked for all parties. And nevertheless, you know, the Red Sox still have Xander Bogaerts, Chris Sale, JD Martinez on their roster. Who do you know who's on the Texas Rangers beyond Kyle Gibson and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa? You know, that's kind of it, right? It's not a nice place to be being a Texas Rangers fan at the moment. So I'm going to pivot. This is a really great segue. One team who it is going to be a really great, it's great, going to be great to be a fan of in the next 2 to 3 years based on a trade that they made yesterday is the Miami Marlins. And we're going to get Pete's take on this tomorrow. But I kind of love that Marte for Lazardo deal for both sides. Now, I think the A's gave up too much, but that is an elite level talent. They are definitely at the back end of their competing window. You know, Olsen and Chapman are not going to be around for too much longer. Manaea coming into his arbitration years as well. And that's usually when the A's are starting to try to move people on. it was, for me, like a typical Billy Beane gutsy move. It was like them trading for Leicester and Samardzija and Jason Hamill 3 or 4 years ago. So it didn't really surprise me. But for the Marlins, that's just another, you know, probably floor number three starter, ceiling number one starter, to go along with all of their floor number three starters, ceiling number one starters that they've got both in the major league club and at AAA and on the injury list. So it seems like it probably isn't going to be the last move that we see for them. If not by tomorrow, then potentially over the winter, some of that starting pitching depth is going to be used to help leverage the center fielder of the future for the Miami Marlins, Rob, isn't it?
Well, it certainly isn't Lewis Brinson.
Sweet Lou.
poor chap. No, I mean, they turned it around fairly quick, haven't they? I mean, it just looked so, so hopeless at the point when that franchise moved hands, swapped over. They were rock bottom. You know, they were disposing of all of their decent players for peanuts. And realistically, you kind of sat there looking at that and you thought, well, it could be 10 years until this team is even worth 500, you know. but they haven't. They've turned it around quick. So well done to their front office. They're certainly making the moves. They're not being too sentimental about what they need to keep. They are making the chops and changes. They're in some ways they're starting to act an awful lot like their Florida counterparts, you know, and that has started to work for them. So yeah, I think the Marlins are looking like a team you could possibly look at next year and say, okay, they're not going to win, but they're going to be relevant. And I think that's a real feather in their cap from the point they were at just a few years ago.
What did you think, Russell? Good first trade for Kim Ang, surely.
Yeah, you obviously have questions about like Lozado going across in this deal, because it amazed me when I looked at it that he's got just over a year's worth of service time. Like, how long has he actually been about? He was pitching in 2018, wasn't he? Like 2019? And obviously all the injuries and all of the other aspects inside it. So like, yeah, the Marlins technically have a player for another 5 and a bit years out of this deal. When you're giving up Marte for, and I do think it is good for both teams, because Oakland's weakness has been that outfield, and so hopefully adding in a player who can give them something, because they are, once again, they're pushing to win that division, because they don't want that wild card game, because it's going to be against, I don't know, like
Tampa or the Yankees, probably, right?
Yeah. Maybe Boston. But
maybe Boston. Yeah. Yeah, sorry. Of course, maybe Boston.
But yeah, it's like that's not a fun game to play, and it will probably be away as well. Houston. So.
You don't want to be facing Chris Sale or Gerrit Cole in a one and done, do you?
Yeah, and you don't want to be facing whatever fantastic concoction which the Rays come up with.
Yeah.
Of six players that you've never heard of, but are now like 0.5 ERA pitchers in the last month. But yeah, it's a hard thing like for the A's to do, but I think you are right. They've got 1 or 2 years left before like Matt Chapman and some of the others hit the free agency, and knowing the A's previous methods, they usually hold on to them, but then they don't put them on big free agent contracts afterwards, so that window will move. The only thing to worry about with Marlins is like, where are the runs scored coming from? Because this is something that I worried about Cleveland this year, of like, well, you can give up less than 3 runs a game, but if you don't score more than you give up, you're not going to win games.
I mean, they have had a bit of rough luck with injuries. Brian Anderson, Rob's favourite, has missed most of the season. Garrett Cooper is now out for the season. He's constantly been injured. Jazz Chisholm's been injured quite a lot. You know, those are probably their three best offensive players, and they've not been on the field an awful lot. But you're not wrong. That season seems to me, like I could see them trading, I don't know, a Pablo Lopez for a high-end impact everyday offensive player in the offseason.
But why trade when because they could offload Duval probably before the end of the trade season. That might happen because he seems to be reasonable. I doubt they'll offload Mickey Rojas because he's got a pretty cheap option for next year, but like he could still get interest between now and next year. I mean, now and the end of the trade deadline. But they're going to be spending like 50, 55 million on payroll this year, next year. So they could go out. I don't know if they will. I don't know if it's in the position to actually do that, but they could be spending like 60, 70 million.
Trevor Story on the fish. Here we come.
Like you can get two superstar level of those free agents if you wanted them. That would be, you put them on big contracts and you have that young pitching around them. Oof, like that's
Chris Bryant and Trevor Story on the right side of your infield is definitely an improvement on what they're currently wheeling out there, isn't it? For sure.
Yeah. And then you have Jazz Chisholm and Jesus Aguilar on the other side, and you're just like, hello. this is suddenly a bit interesting.
Matt Joyce. Sorry, I felt entirely obligated at every mention of that man. So we're not going to stay on trades too much longer, but I just wanted to touch on one more club. So another team that's been active this week, made two trades today, is the White Sox, who everyone anticipated would look to upgrade to consolidate their place atop the AL Central. They've taken Ryan Tepera in a rare crosstown trade from the Chicago Cubs. Hopefully it goes as well for them as the last time they traded with the Cubs, which was Eloy Jimenez and Dylan Cease for Jose Quintana, arguably the worst trade in recent memory in Major League Baseball. And also picked up Cesar Hernandez from your Cleveland club, Russell, which is a really perplexing trade for me. Why he's fine, but they probably need better than fine in order to take a deep run into October, surely.
Yeah, you have questions. It's like, obviously, I think Andrew Vaughn was playing second base for them today. So it's like, it's obviously an issue position for them right now, and putting in a steady hand there will be useful, or having that extra depth. But he's been good for Cleveland for the amount that they've spent on him. Like he's been a perfectly just above average player, which is what you want when you have those sorts of like cheap deals. And I don't have anything really bad to say about him, but it just seems more of a squad depth option, which maybe that's actually what they need, because they've got the division wrapped up, like barring like some catastrophic feck up from here. It's like they've got that division wrapped up, so you're just about having those additional players, or maybe just a couple of senior players that can help them through the postseason run, which they're going to get into. But obviously, I think Tepera is hopefully this means he'll now get AL as well as NL MVP votes, or Cy Young votes, like he did last year. But yeah, it will improve them. And I don't think there's anything more to say than that. And I think anything they've sent him, I don't even know what Cleveland have got in return, if I'm perfectly honest.
Connor Pilkington.
Yeah, who apparently is quite good from what I've read this afternoon. But, you know, we'll see.
Opens the door for Ernie Clement at second base too.
I love Ernie Clement.
Ernie Clement, what a name.
Yeah.
He genuinely sounds like,
he's a greengrocer.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah, but you like that, but I think Clement's like slightly injured right now, so it'll probably be Owen Miller who will actually play second base for a bit.
He is less interesting. He doesn't sound like he's a milkman.
Doesn't do it for you. It's obviously delightful for that. Normally, I think Cleveland would have just put Jimenez in at second, but he can't do that right now because they're going to play in Canada, and he's in the middle of sorting out his US citizenship and is not allowed to leave the US. So it's like, woo! Throw those little additional spanners into the works.
You're having an exciting time. So we're going to do our two good, two bads in a moment, and we're going to do some half season picks. But before we do, I want to get you guys' takes on three of the biggest names still on the market, and whether you think they're going to get traded, and if so, where. So Max Scherzer, Rob. Is he going to be traded? Giants. So you think this time tomorrow we're going to be talking about Scherzer on the Giants. What about you, Russell?
I'll just throw the spanner into the works, Padres.
You think he's going to go to the Padres? And I think he's going to go, I think he's going to go to Boston. Like that's my prediction for Scherzer. And I'm not just, it's not Homer pick. if it's not Boston, I think it's just there's something in the tea leaves about it today. If it's not Boston and the fact that Chaim Bloom has been so quiet over the course of this week. Otherwise, I think he's going to go to LA. So next one, Chris Bryant. Is he going to get traded, Russell? And if so, where's he going to go?
Like, I just feel that he's not going to get traded. I feel like this is going to be the one that, like, the Cubs have messed, like, Bryant up, like, the entire way and everything that they've done. So, like, this will just be the one that, like, fails to happen for me.
I agree. I think he's not getting traded. Rob, are you going to give us any sucker? Do you think he's moving?
He's going to go somewhere a bit weird, somewhere a bit left field. You know, he's essentially a rental. I think he will end up on the A's as well.
Interesting. I love that pick. That'd be a really great pickup for the Rays. Where's he going to play though? A's. Left field.
No, the A's. Yeah,
the A's. A's. I knew. Sorry, I was going to say. And so I was transitioning. Where's he going to play? Left field. I assume he's going to play in Oakland.
They need people in the outfield, so
they do. And he can't. He's played left field a bit. He's certainly not going to play at third base, or Darius will cry. And finally, I mean, there's loads I could pick here, so I'm just going to pick one more. Trevor Story, Rob, is he going to get traded?
Nope, stays put.
I mean, that would be...
It's stupid, but they'll do it. I mean,
it'd be a marker of the mismanagement of that.
The Rockies have done absolutely nothing to give me any confidence that they have the slightest clue what they're doing. So, yeah, he's going to stay put. And he'll sign like a one-year extension for some reason.
No, I think he's going to Tampa. Him and Daniel Bard are going to Tampa. That's my prediction. Russell.
I think the Rockies are going to continue to pay him and he's going to go to the Yankees.
Oh, there you go. That one's been trailed a bit today. Some spicy takes there, gents. Some spicy takes. So we're going to round off with, as usual, on our MLB roundups with our Too Good, Too Bad. Pilfered from my great personal friend, Adrian Charles, of course, from Match of the Night 2. Just going to drop that in there again. So we're going to start with bads, of course. Russell, you go first. What's your first bad for the first half of the 2021 MLB season?
Yeah, it's a pretty depressing bad, if I'm perfectly honest, but it's the minor league player issues that we've kind of seen. And when I talk about issues, I'm talking about, like, obviously the continued fact that they are paid under the wage line, or minimum wage line that exists in the States. But because of, like, the COVID protocols that have been existed, this year they're not allowed to have, to stay at people's houses, to have, like, sponsors who kind of, like, put them up or whatever. Kind of think of the word and I've completely forgotten what they call it now, but like, so they have to be in like hotels or apartments to actually do this, so which is a higher expense than they normally would be paying, and they're being paid marginally more than they've done before. They're not getting stipends. It's just an absolute farce. And then you have things, the usual stuff, where now actually they have to sign contracts for rental places. So they're signing 6-month contracts and then being moved affiliate 2 months in and not having to then having to pay 4 months for a place which they can't actually in, and they're struggling to kind of get it replaced. Like, it just blows my mind that no owner has thought, this is a really cynical way of thinking about it, but it is a market inefficiency to treat my players well, to feed them well, to house them well, to let them sleep properly so they could be better athletes and therefore give more back to my team. It is utterly ridiculous that no team looks at this to a serious extent. When I first got into baseball and I thought, and I read that all the teams have minor league teams, that's what I thought happened. I thought they would have like campuses next to like the stadiums that they played in these lower league things. And then I was just like, oh, that doesn't happen. And I was like, what the feck is going on here? And
obviously I did that conversation with Jeremy Wolf of More Than Baseball a couple of months ago. I knew about the housing thing, and the housing thing has blown my mind for years. But even then I didn't realize they literally have to buy their own bats.
Yeah.
What?
It makes no sense.
Are you kidding? Like, could you imagine a Premier League football club making the players buy footballs? That's kind of where we are here. Mm. It's ludicrous. I'm going to not play devil's advocate, because obviously I totally agree with you. But do you think, Russell, that it does feel to me as though there's a hole in the dam this year, right? So we know this just seems to be so much more in the public consciousness, and people even people who don't normally engage with labor issues seem to be quite outraged by some of the things that they're seeing here. Do you feel atrocious as it is in the year 2021, that this is still the life that these young men are living when they're supposed to be, conditioning themselves to operate at the pinnacle of professional athletics? Is the worm turning, or am I maybe just being a bit hopeful?
I'm in the same hopeful level of you, that by this being brought more to light. Obviously, we see athletic articles about this all the time, but the fact that there was a major article on ESPN, which is something that more regular or casual fans maybe even see, this is kind of great stuff. But until the minor leaguers have a union, they're getting nothing, as far as I'm concerned. Until the Major League Players Association pulls the finger out their bloody arses and decides that, you know what, these people are going to be future members of our association, so we should probably actually treat them with respect, instead of dicking them over in every single deal that we do with MLB because we don't actually care about them until they're actually our members, then they're not going to get any improvement. So it takes either a mass walkout of a team or a couple of teams or some significant people to walk out on what's happening, or it'll take or a player strike. And I just don't think there's enough people at the minor league level who are willing to take that risk. So it's going to sadly carry on the same way. I know there's this dynamic between the fact that the clubs don't actually own the minor league teams, so therefore there's this mix.
That's an excuse. It's a complete excuse.
Who should be putting the investment in? It muddies the waters and it makes it
It's an excuse. And look, good on of all people, the Houston Astros, and latterly coming to the party in the last couple of weeks, the Boston Red Sox, for actually stepping up and fixing this situation for their minor leaguers at very least. 28 clubs need to follow that lead, as far as I'm concerned. Rob, sorry to cut you off, Russell.
We could go on. We could go on for hours.
and we definitely will. Rob, what's your first bad?
Well, mine's relatively less serious, but it's the Minnesota Twins have been a disaster. What's going on there?
How are they?
What's happened there? It's just, you look at some of these teams, you look at the Orioles, you look at the Pirates, you think, yeah, okay, we fully expect this. The Twin, I mean, yes, I made an overly zealous prediction preseason that they'd win 94 games, but you probably would have taken 94 over what they're actually heading for. That would probably have been a more likely outcome than what they're getting. I don't think anybody would have seen them dropping quite as badly as they have. Like right now, they're sat plumb last in the Central with 43 wins. And I don't remember seeing anywhere anybody even remotely suggesting they were going to be quite this bad. So what's happened? Because you look at the team, it's absolutely across the board. No part of the team is doing even close to what it should, other than Byron Buxton, who's, let's face it, not been around all that much. The rest of it's just been utter dross. Where has this come from, and what is happening in Minnesota? Because there's got to be some horrible mismanagement. It's got to be. I mean, what is going on?
Who even knows what's going on there? I mean, wasn't Rocco Baldelli one of the hot new managers in baseball over the last 24 months or so? Ah, God, it's just atrocious. How can that many good players be this bad all at the same time? Something gone dreadfully wrong. And if they do end up losing Berrios and Buxton in the next 24 hours, then God, that's a real sign that they've completely lost confidence in the core of the squad. Yeah, I even read that they might be willing to trade Max Kepler. Just seems absolutely ludicrous. Yeah. I mean, I know he's not been around much this year, but God, it's gone wrong, hasn't it?
Any team that's trotting out Rob Refsnyder needs to take a good look at themselves. I mean, well, they should have been competing, and they've got players like that turning up, and it's poorly managed. There's something really rotten in there.
Yeah, I see that, and would like to talk to you about the New York Yankees outfield of Trey Ambergay, Greg Allen, and Ryan Lamar that we saw last week. Which, by the way, beat the Boston Red Sox ludicrously.
The Twins.
In that rinky-dink seventh inning, lots of bloops game, by the way. Sorry, go on, Russ.
No, the thing about the Twins, like you say, Byron Buxton leads the Twins in war. Byron Buxton has played 27 games.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's insane.
Like, yes, you could say, like, there are some players, like, Polanco, this is like Fangraphs war. Polanco's at, like, 2, Cruz, 1.8, Donaldson, like, 1.6, Mitch Garber, like, 1.5. This isn't bad. Like, there's this kind of middle core that's fine, but then you look at the pitching and you're like, it's been vomit-inducing at, like, times. Like, with the exception of, like, Pineda as, like, a starter, you're like, whoa. Like, like, Maeda's been okay. I mean, Berrios and Pineda have, like, Pineda's, like, out doing his stats, but it's just... And then you just look at what comes up
into Detroit. Berrios is doing the opposite, as usual.
Yeah. And then you just look at, like, what's been coming in to try and finish off games. I don't know if they have more, like, blown saves than anybody else, yeah. But it is...
Colomé has been a disaster, isn't he?
It's been pretty disgusting. Like, when Hansel Robles is the person that you have trying to save games for you, you know you have an issue. Like, that he shouldn't be in that position. So...
Yeah, I did not know that fact. Yeah, the Minnesota Twins are absolutely atrocious. So my bad, unfortunately, yours was the levity in a shit sandwich there, Rob. The shit being on either side of it, because I'm gonna talk about the Los Angeles Dodgers, and I'm not gonna dwell on this for too long, except to say that a team this good should never be in the bad column. And yet here you are, sitting in your own shit. You've made your own bed, now lie in it. Oh, everybody told you that this was going to happen. Well, maybe not this, but something bad was going to happen. All of these players who anonymous reports are now saying will never speak to that man ever again. You had your opportunity to try and do something about this. And all of you stepped away from that. When given an opportunity to say in public what you thought about the trade, which people knew you thought in private, even acknowledging his talent, you failed to do so. Dave Roberts' response, albeit putting a difficult situation, when the allegations first came to public light, was abysmal. The whole organization is an absolute stink. I desperately hope they do not get anywhere in the playoffs or the World Series this season, because it would just feel like an absolute shame of a season. I feel really, really conflicted about so many of those players who I was so pleased to see get a World Series ring in the autumn, because I just feel like there's a long, long way for this team to go to get away from what they have done to their own franchise, and they deserve it. So that's what I have to say about those fucking idiots. Can we talk about something good? Yeah. Russell.
Shohei! We'll be like every other podcast that exists about baseball, and we'll talk about Shohei Ohtani. And when everybody says you talk about Shohei Ohtani too much, we'll say,
no,
we're
don't.
Not talking about Shohei Ohtani enough. This man is utterly brilliant on so many regards. He is leading the league in home runs while being an above average pitcher at the same time, with occasional starts looking superlative. Like, this is just fantastic. Like, the concept of a two-way player in baseball, or an all-rounder, as we were kind of talking it from like a British cricketing perspective, I didn't think this was possible. Like, obviously, like, I've only watched baseball properly for like 6 or 7 years, but when people trump out that like Zach Greinke and Madison Bumgarner can hit, I was like, no, they can't. Like, yes, they're better than like the other pitchers, but they're all still at like 60 WRC plus or 70 at best. It's like, we have somebody who can pitch right now who is not far off being the best hitter in the game. His, even if you take out his pitching performances, stands in the position to be MLB, like, or to be the AL MVP. He's probably, I wouldn't vote for him just on his, actually I might vote for him based just on his hitting performance, but it'd be a very difficult discussion between him and Guerrero. But he's just phenomenal. And he does it with a smile on his face. Mm. He went to the, he did the home run derby. He did all of the stuff at the All-Star game and the All-Star week when, if perfectly honest, if there was someone who could have said, you know what, I just need a couple of days off, and I would have said, I said that, yes, to everybody, any one of those players who wanted a couple of days off because the season is really, really long. Hey, we're seeing like stuff with like Simone Biles right now and Naomi Osaka, like players and sports stars need to be able to kind of say like, I need a day off or I need some time off. But he was out there basically just doing absolutely everything. He is the face of MLB right now. Like, sorry, Tom, Tatis is so last year, but it's like, so 2020. But it's like, and if anything, I'm the only thing that's disappointing about Shohei Ohtani is he's not in Tokyo right now playing with Japan in the Olympics. Oh, obviously, there aren't fans, so we wouldn't have the same fanfare that could have occurred. But gee whiz, this is just everything that any of us wanted with him coming across. Like the having those bad seasons where he was injured and couldn't really pitch, and when he did pitch, sometimes you were kind of like, that's not amazing. And when he started and he wasn't that great with the bat, and you had all of those MLB scouts coming out saying he's a high school hitter, which I can't remember who said it first, but I think it may have been like Craig Goldstein or somebody like that you can get an MLB scout to say anything. So, so it's like, it's just fantastic to watch. And I will just go in more superlatives and just
he is
like a schoolgirl, just fawning.
he is amazing. He's also a very handsome boy, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. Like that's another reason to schoolgirl fawn over him. He's delightful. I just quick sidetrack. So we've already talked about the Olympics, but I was genuine. You talked about the fact that he's not there being like a genuine sadness. The other sadness for me was, much as I love Naomi Osaka and I love the fact that they got her to light that cauldron, like that would have been Ichiro had he not been in Seattle. And that made me a little bit sad.
Yeah.
I loved seeing Hideki Matsui there. That was lovely. Mm-hmm. But Ichiro like is the greatest sportsman in Japanese history. He would have lit the cauldron. But, you know, he's in the Pacific Northwest. What are you doing, guys? COVID be damned. Get him over there. Rob, what's your first good of the first half of the season?
It's possibly subjective, but I think the infield web gems. I feel like I think this has probably come from the Tatis thing. There's more of a sort of sellout for big infield plays. I don't know if they are actually statistically doing any better or not. Possibly not. But it looks better. It looks great. I've noticed people who would normally sort of, you know, take a half step, see it go past. They're not, they are laying out. They are playing it in a much more athletic way. And it's very pleasing on the eyes. You're seeing fewer and fewer of these sort of boxy bat first guys. And like there's a real sort of youth and athleticism about the infields these days when they just seem to be, you know, you used to look for the Buxtons and the Kiermaiers and the, you know, JBJs in the outfield. That's where you're expecting your acrobatics, but it's not happening anymore now. It's coming on the infield. And you know what? It happens more in the infield because that's where most of the play is. So more of that, thanks. It looks absolutely fantastic. I love me a web gem and more of them on the infield. Super stuff.
Yeah, I love that. That's a really good one. I was genuinely tempted, having just seen it there, to change my first good of the year to the fact that Andrew Chafin now gets to play baseball in John Deere green and yellow. But I'm not going to go for that. I'm going to go for Trey Mancini. Just a wonderful, extraordinary story, you know, coming back from cancer last year and being the franchise icon and cornerstone of a otherwise pretty difficult and rotten Baltimore Orioles. Sorry, Cedric Mullins. Aside, he's been brilliant. Like, you know, he's clubbed a whole bunch of homers. He took part in the home run derby and everyone was like, well, isn't it nice that they're letting him have a little go there? And then he was really, really good. And Yeah, just a truly inspiring guy, right down to yesterday evening where he, of course, you know, guys who follow the Orioles know he had this amazing bond with young Mo Gabba himself, who was undergoing cancer treatment at the same time as Mancini, who sadly lost his fight, unlike Trey did. And his mum was there yesterday, and Trey said he was going to hit a homer for Mo, and he did. And then he gave the home run ball to his mum, and it almost made me well up. Just, my goodness, I mean, they may as well just retire the comeback player of the year award after this year and just like give it to him in perpetuity, because there is never, ever going to be a story like that in baseball history. Mm. Just absolutely wonderful. Okay. Back to bad. I feel bad for Trey Mancini that we're coming back to something rotten. Russell, I hope it's a little more cheeky than your last choice.
Oh, it is. And I'm actually going to swerve from what I suggested, like in our pre-thing. I was going to talk about the D-backs, but I think it's just too simple. I actually just want to talk about the Cubs and like the Indians. I think Cleveland or whatever, Guardians, whatever you want to call them. It's that World Series was like 4.5 years ago, where these were two of the best teams in baseball. We're 4 years removed, and these teams are sellers. They are like in like just getting rid of all the money they have, massively wealthy owners. It's like everything that's wrong with baseball is that they've both determined that it's not worth paying people and continuing to push out for like getting like 90 win teams and hoping, like, I'm trying to push it to get to that 95-100, that it's better to break it back down to zero and build it back up again. It's not good for the sport. Like, every team can look at it and say, look what happened to Houston. I mean, even maybe look what happened to the Cubs, that they did it. But you can also go, well, look what happened to the Phillies. Look what happened to the Orioles. Look what happened to Texas, as we talked about before. Look what happened to, like, the Rockies. Like, it's not an easy thing to, like, tear it down and build it back up again and be in a good position to do it. And the concept of financial flexibility, of like, oh, we'll save some money now so you'll spend it later on. My ass, you'll spend it later on. Like, you'll save the money now and just not do it later on. And it's just, it's not good. And I don't know if a salary floor is the perfect way to go about it, but I would love to have something like that introduced in the CBA this next year, because it's so depressing to see championship winning teams just be traded and like let go bit by bit, and it's 4 years removed. And can you name, are there many players on either team that actually played in the World Series? I can't imagine. You could probably get more than like four or five on both teams.
Yeah, it's pretty impressing watching those two teams be so poor. I mean, in some respects, you know, the Cubs have just gone, right? The back end's fallen out of them. I don't know what's more indignant, a team being absolutely dreadful or a team just completely treading water by choice. How the Cleveland team are. It's thoroughly upsetting and depressing. Rob, where are we going next?
Let's go to the runner on second, which I've been a fan of since it started.
Big fan of, yeah.
Big, but okay, all right. However you want to put it. Okay, yeah. I've leaned away from being fully in favor of it. I'm still more on the fence, I would say, than against it. But it's just every single time it happens now, there's a tone about it, and it's almost like the action itself of putting a runner on second is ruined by the fact that everybody is so miserable about it all the time. And you know what? Fine. If we just need to take it away to stop that misery, then fine. But like, you go into extra innings, and then the announcers are talking about it. Twitter gets, oh God, here we go with Manfred Ball. And just the discourse of it around it is now just sort of, ugh. And so I don't want it anymore, just because everyone else has spoiled it. So I will take my second inning ball and I am going home.
Okay. But you do realize that if we do that, you let Jeff Fry win. And we don't do that on this podcast. So I say keep it. I wouldn't say I've had a Damascene conversion over it, but I was quite skeptical. And now I don't really care Honestly, the game's finished quite quickly. I'm never awake for them anyway, so it makes no odds to me when I'm watching the condensed game or reading the recaps the following day as far. But you know, I can see why people would. So my second bad is the NL East. That's the division that we confidently predicted at the beginning of 2021 in our roundups is going to be, you know, the wrecking ball division. Literally anyone could win it. And it's true. And the reason that anyone could win it is because they're all absolutely terrible. I do not understand how five teams with that level of talent, and I'm, you know, let's bracket the Marlins in there. They're clearly the fifth best team on true talent level in that division, are so bad. Like, the Mets are kind of winning this division by default at the moment.
Well, they're over 500. They're the only team that's over 500.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, they've got some makeup games there because of the COVID stuff at the start of the season. So they're probably, you know, their true position is probably a little further ahead of that. But the Nationals have been absolutely rotten. Like, just, they got absolutely nothing out of their big players. The Braves, again, just really poor. Obviously, some pretty rough stuff's happened with them, with Azuna, Cunha getting the long-term injury. But even before that, they were scuffling. And the Phillies, man. Oh, my God. If ever there was a club that is like the avatar of like generational mismanagement, it's that one. You know, signing players who you thought were going to be franchise cornerstones to long-term deals who it turned out were absolute rubbish, Scott Kingery, you know, not taking advantage of really, really good players, like homegrown players like Aaron Nola and Rhys Hoskins at the very height of their powers, signing megastars like Bryce Harper and seemingly, you know, not doing your due diligence on them and them not being what you thought they were. And then just repeatedly making bad trades and making bad personnel decisions in terms of, you know, who your manager's going to be and so on. Because, you know, look, you know, seems like Gabe Kapler's actually a good baseball manager. So, you know, bringing him in and then jettisoning him for old man Joe Girardi and his hard scrabble ways doesn't exactly look like a sort of forward-facing. I mean, look, this is not about the Phillies. It's about the NL East and how they are so desperately bad collectively. That it's embarrassing. Like, it's embarrassing that that division that has that level of talent has got this level of production. Pull yourselves together, guys, and we'll see you next season.
Just want to add Ken Rosenthal, Padres close to acquiring Max Scherzer.
Oh, there we go. So my shout on Boston. You were right then. You said the Padres,
well,
didn't you?
I may be calling out my own win before it's actually happened here. I'm counting my chickens definitely before they've hatched. but in Ken we trust.
In Ken we certainly do trust.
God. Tom's going to be insufferable, isn't he?
That couldn't really have gone worse as far as I'm concerned. That is just absolutely horrible.
Should we get back onto our
Can I change my back from the NL East to what you've just said?
Things that make Tom Pringle happy.
Did you see that his response to Twitter testing a dislikes function was just to like quote tweet that news with looks at my tweets with like a picture of a guy rubbing his hands together underneath it.
That's like Twitter spent the last 6 months trying to be Snapchat, Instagram, might as well try and be Reddit. So
yeah, it's such a child. Okay, let's talk about some more good stuff. Russell, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I feel that it would be remiss of us if we didn't talk about the San Francisco Giants.
Like, hey!
It's like, you can think about some of it and be like, how have we gotten here? But Mike Petriello did a really, really good piece the other day on MLB talking about like the
was
Giants
it better than that Billy Ripken thing on MLB Network?
that was nearly my like bad. that piece of like fake news level propaganda that was shown on MLR.
Carry on, Russell. Sorry for distracting you.
You just really grinded my gears, if we can go with that old quote. But yeah, no, like they've had basically like the second fewest innings from like weak pitchers, which was the like pitchers that had a FIP of over 5, and they've had the second fewest number of play appearances from batters with a WRC plus of 85 or less. So we get this concept of like stars and scrubs is how some teams form a team, and then other teams you just have this glob of like okay players. But this year, this glob of okay players has for the Giants has become a glob of really okay players, and some of them have played quite good. And I think there has been like some very good management of like they do have some platooning, they do some move things about. But we all thought they were going to have a good pitching team before the start of the season. We just thought they weren't going to be able to hit runs. And so they've done that. They've played well. They've beaten the good teams. It's not like they're beating poor teams and losing to other teams. They have like a good record against the Dodgers. They have a good record against the Padres so far this year. So it's great to see somebody kind of put a team together that is done in a different way. I think as much as people can say they hate analytics or whatever, like it can push an idea of like how you should put a team together. And there's always that concept of when everybody zigs, you should zag. But they do seem to have found a market inefficiency, which is 30-year-olds that nobody else seems to want to have, who are actually all right. So,
who would have thought Darren Ruff was a market inefficiency?
Yeah,
sounds like my dating profile.
I might even though I'm, you know, happily in a relationship, I might go on Tinder just to have that as my bio to see if I get any hits.
And the other thing to say with the Giants this year is that I don't know if it's something that will continue, but defensively they've been so much better than they've been in a couple of the previous years. Like they've been a really poor team defensively in the last like two and a half seasons, but this year they're actually solidly like either average or like above average in quite a lot of like the I think they're top in outs above average, which is the MLB metric, and I think they're 6th or 7th in defensive runs saved, which is the like Sports Info Solutions metric, which is like the two high level ones that people will trust. So putting that all together, they look good, and they don't look like they're going to drop off a cliff. Like I've been expecting them to drop off a cliff for months, and it's not happening. So we have to get we're at close to the point in the season where current record actually is more favorable to what they'll be their end of the season record than the projections will be. So we're getting close to that point where we now actually should believe the current record is how good teams are. So they're there, and it's great to see three teams be fantastic in the same division at the same time. Like, I love it because it forces people's hands. It forces like the Padres to maybe have to sign Max Scherzer. Like, this makes teams have to spend money to make themselves better, which makes baseball better. So it's been fantastic.
Good. Love it. Rob, what's your second good?
It's the more recent reaction to sticky stuff removal. This was going to be the apocalypse for pitchers' elbows, the end of the world for any sort of pitching. Yet it's all been dealt with. And I must say, you know, everyone, again, MLB were going to ruin everything. It was going to be horrendous. Everyone sort of got on with it, really. All right, Joe Girardi threw a wobbly and Sergio Romo dropped his pants. But other than that, it's all gone sort of fairly fine. You know, no one's arm other than Tyler Glasnow's has fallen off. Pitchers are maybe not quite as dominant as we wanted, which is what we wanted. So, you know, I think change has been managed fairly well in this occasion, which isn't something we get to say an awful lot about in baseball. But yeah, there's a bit of a success story there.
Well, there you go. A bit of rare praise on this podcast for Robert Manfred. just clip that one out, Rob. You can have that. Not this Rob, that Rob. So I'm going to wrap it up by talking about another person we rarely praise on this podcast, Tony La Russa, whose White Sox team have been good, like really, really good, despite, you know, not having Lewis Robert and Eloy Jimenez for most of the season, having Andrew Vaughn playing at second base, having Lucas Giolito start the season quite poorly, albeit he's pitching like Lucas Giolito again more lately. Yeah, it's the pitching, man. It's Carlos Rodon. It's Dylan Cease just being absolutely incredible. And then the bullpen being, you know, from Hendricks down, being completely lights out. So I don't know how much of this we can lay at the door of the great man. Maybe more than we'd like to. A little. Russell's just zero. I do still feel it's rather more in spite than because of him, but they are, you know, a really fun dynamic team with really likable players with great energy, and it's great to see more teams like that succeeding and prospering in this great sport that we love. And you know, just seeing a lot of Tim Anderson flexing, that's what we're all here for. Right, that's it. Done. It's been a long one. And there's going to be another long one tomorrow. We're back tomorrow evening for a trade deadline wash up, if indeed there are any players left to trade come 8 p.m. tomorrow night, UK time. If you want to find our stuff, you can go on to batflipsandnerds.com or bbc.co.uk. And you can find us on Twitter at batflips_nerds and on Instagram and on Facebook at batflipsandnerds. Rob, it's been a pleasure. Good to see you.
Good to see you too.
And Russell, good to see you cheers, too.
I was thinking when you just said, Rob, it's been a pleasure. And I was just being like, well, cheers.
Yeah, I was coming round to you and then, you know, the words got stuck in my throat.
I felt like, am I the new Pringle here? Am I the one who gets the abuse now?
No, absolutely. Always him. Thanks very much, guys. Good to see you both. And thanks to everyone for listening. And we'll see you again soon.